First of all, I'd like to thank all the devotees for being so kind and helpful during my stay in Radhadesh since the 8th evening. I got a lot done. And once again, I was very impressed by y'all, as we say in the South of America, and your commitment to Prabhupada's mission. So many nice things here. Every night I would be serenaded to sleep by the younger generation. It was great. Their bhajans in the temple room. And just your spirit, serious, sincere, sweet, and keep it up. When you live here, you forget. I know it's hard when you live here. You get familiar, you forget, you take it for granted, you know, all those human things. But you got a good thing going here, so please just build it, build it, build it. So, okay. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, translation and commentary by Srila Prabhupada, 5th Canto, The Creative Impetus, Chapter 16, A Description of Jambudvipa. Today we'll do text 22 through 24. And it is all prose, so I'll just read the prose. Text 22. Yastu mahakadambaha suparsvanirudho yastasya kotare bhyo vinisrita panchayama parinaha panchabadhudhara suparsva Shikarat patantyo parinatmanam ilabritam anumodayanti. Translation: on the side of Suparshva mountain stands a big tree called Mahakadamba, which is very celebrated. From the hollows of this tree flow 5 rivers of honey. So there's a tree, and you get the hollow in the middle between the branches. And from the hollow flow 5 rivers of honey, each about 5 vyamas wide. And Prabhupada in the purport says a vyama is about 8 feet. Well, I'll come to that. This flowing honey falls incessantly from the top of Suparshva mountain and flows all around Ilavrata Varsha, beginning from the western side. Thus the whole land is saturated with the pleasing fragrance. Srila Prabhupada's 3-sentence purport. The distance between one hand and another, when one spreads both his arms, is called a vyama. This comes to about 8 feet. Now, I measured my span, and I barely got 6. So I think you have to be a Zulu or something, you know, to have 8 feet. Thus, each of the rivers was about 40 feet wide. So it's 5 yamas times 8, Prabhupada says, is 40, each of the rivers of honey, 40 feet wide. And you get 5 of these, so it's 200 feet of honey rivers coming from the hollows of this tree, Mahakadamba, making a total of about 200 feet. Got that? Okay. Text 23. The air carrying the scent from the mouths of those who drink that honey perfumes the land for 100 yojanas around. So that's 800 miles. Or what, about 1,100 kilometers? Something like that. So the air carrying the scent from the mouths of those who drink that honey perfumes the land for 100 yojanas around. This is why it's so intoxicating in the heavenly planets. You know, our breath is a whole billion-dollar industry out there to make the breath smell nice, right? We know what the breath smells like. But in the higher regions, you know, just the air coming from the mouths of those who drink that honey perfumes the land for 100 yojanas around. Text 24, and this is the one that there's a substantial purport for. Similarly, on Kumuda Mountain, there is a great banyan tree, which is called Shatavalsha, because it has 100 main branches. From those branches come many roots, from which many rivers are flowing. These rivers flow down from the top of the mountain to the northern side of Ilavrata Varsha, for the benefit of those who live there. We have in the ISKCON Honolulu Temple, we have the largest banyan tree of its variety on the island of Oahu, and there's many banyans, and it's huge. And it's just like you read in the Gita, you know, the roots are coming down, and you know, we have to prune it because we're in a neighborhood where if we let it go, it would devour the neighborhood. But it's quite a tree, and it's quite a meditation when you look at the tree and you think, yeah, this is the material world. So entangling. Because of these flowing rivers, all the people have ample supplies of milk, yogurt, honey, clarified butter or ghee, molasses, food grains, clothes, bedding, sitting places, and ornaments. This is all because of the rivers. All the objects they desire are sufficiently supplied for their prosperity, and therefore they are very happy. Srila Prabhupada's purport. The prosperity of humanity does not depend on a demoniac civilization that has no culture and no knowledge, but has only gigantic skyscrapers and huge automobiles always rushing down the highways. Prabhupada, sometimes he would call it a four-wheel dog race. He said, you see them going back and forth. Why don't they just meet in the middle and settle up? Jai Sisi Radha Gopinath. The products of nature are sufficient when there is a profuse supply of milk, yogurt, honey, food, grains, ghee, molasses, dhoti, saris, bedding, sitting places, and ornaments. The residents are actually opulent. When a profuse supply of water from the river inundates the land, all these things can be produced, and there will not be scarcity. This all depends, however, on the performance of, and now Prabhupada writes the S word, sacrifice. The word nobody wants to hear, right? On the news, I'm always hearing about how they're trying to save the euro and all the, like Spain and in Greece, they're riding against austerity, and in France too, austerity measures, you know, sacrifice. Heck. Because they know that the rich aren't doing it, the rich are just getting richer off them. So that's Kali Yuga. This all depends, however, on the performance of sacrifice as described in the Vedic literature. Annad bhavanti bhutani parjanya danasambhava jagad bhavati parjanyo jagakarma samudbhavaha. All living bodies subsist on food grains, which are produced from rains. Rains are produced by the performance of jaga sacrifice, and jaga is born of prescribed duties. And then in the next verse, Krishna says, prescribed duties come from the Vedas, and the Vedas are directly manifested from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So it all comes back to Krishna. These are the prescriptions given in Bhagavad Gita 3:14. If people follow these principles in full Krishna consciousness, human society will be prosperous, and they will be happy both in this life and in the next. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurundritam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. I offer my respectful obeisances unto my spiritual master, who is kindly opening my eyes, which were blinded by the darkness of ignorance, with the torch light of knowledge. So you may remember in the beginning of the chapter how Parikshit, this is the beginning of descriptions of the universe. basically chapters 15 through 26. So Parikshit Maharaj asked a question which is very similar to what the devotees are studying at night in the Bhagavad Gita class, that Arjuna asked Krishna a very similar question. In the 10th chapter of the Gita, Vibhuti Yoga, the opulence of the Absolute, where we're invited to see Krishna's opulence through his energies. And Arjuna said, I think in the 17th verse, Hantate katayashyami divya hyatma vibhutayah pradhanyata kuru shreshta nastyanto vistarasyame. Arjuna is saying, please tell me of your opulences in detail. You know, you've given me a hint. Like in the 7th chapter, Krishna says, I'm the taste of water, the light of the sun and the moon, the heat and fire, the life of all that lives, etc. And now he wants to know in detail. And then Krishna says, oh, okay, basically text 20 through 40. I'll tell you of my opulence, but I'll just, you know, give you a little hint. I can't tell you everything because it's unlimited. And we never take prasadam, right? Because class ends. So also in the 5th canto, Parikshit Maharaj asked Shukadeva Goswami the same thing. You've told me, way back in the 2nd canto, you know, to meditate on the Lord through seeing him in this cosmos, his external energy. You know, 2nd canto is a lot about the cosmic manifestation. So could you please tell me more details? So Shukadeva says a similar thing. Okay, you know, but it's unlimited, it's inconceivable. Like I mentioned, you know, I think, you know, during a question and answer, I mentioned how we say the same things the scientists say, ultimately. But where everything comes from is unlimited, it's eternal, it's inconceivable. They say the same thing when you pin them down, you know. They ultimately say that. So we say the same thing. It's just a question of which one you want to choose. Do you want to choose the all-attractive, unlimited, eternal, inconceivable, or do you want to choose something, you know, impersonal or void, basically? So Arjuna asked these kinds of questions, and Parikshit Maharaj asked these kinds of questions because we may be not this body, we may be not be of this world, but here we are, inside a body in this world. So Krishna is so kind, this is his kind genius, he wants us to remember him even in this world. He wants us to, everything we see, hear, smell, touch, taste, he wants us, instead of seeing it as paraphernalia, you know, to try to control and enjoy it, that's the illusion, that's called Krishna's illusory potency, that we think somehow we can control and enjoy everything here. No, it's Krishna's. Maya adyakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam. This is it's working under my direction. You know, while you're doing all your computers and you're manipulating this and that, transportation, communication, whatever you think you're doing, in the background you're getting beat at every step by Father Time. He's beating you to a pulp. So Krishna, Shukadev, they're kindly giving us ways to remember Krishna and bust through the illusion, pierce the illusion with the eyes of knowledge. Om Jnana Timurandasya. Shastra Chakshusha. We want to see everything through Krishna's eyes. You know, otherwise we don't even know what we're seeing. You know, we just see it. That's why Kaviraja Goswami says, Stavara Jangama. Whatever you see, whether it's moving or unmoving, the pure devotee, what does he see? He doesn't exactly just see the thing. He sees, everything reminds him of Krishna. So that's the whole purpose of these descriptions. Ultimately, Shukadeva says that. This is to deepen our understanding of and appreciation how everything, every sarga, visarga, all these, you know, fantastic creations we're reading about, they come from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And I'll tell you, as fantastic as they sound, I'm going to tell you a little story of how sometimes you really get a glimpse of Krishna's mystery. I mean, if you're conscious, you get it every moment. You see everything is miraculous, right? Like in Mexico, this scholar thought she had Prabhupada stumped. Yeah, Mexico City. You may have seen this recording, it's called. Why is there anything? We were wondering, Your Grace, why is there anything? You know, she thought it was like a stumper. So Prabhupada immediately turned the question. Prabhupada said, instead of asking why, Prabhupada said, everything is already here. Better you ask, where does everything come from? And then you might get to know why there's anything. And that's true. First you get to know where and from whom everything comes. Yasmin vigyate sarvam evam vigyatam bhavanti. It says in the Vedas, the Vedic aphorism, if we know Krishna, we know everything in the sense that we know where everything comes from. Just like if you happen to be, Chelsea Clinton, the daughter of Bill Clinton. It was just in the news that politics might be on her agenda for a career, right? So because her dad, you know, was the president for 8 years, even if she didn't go to the Kennedy School of Government in Harvard, you can bet your bottom dollar, as we say in America, although we don't bet in ISKCON, but that she knows all about the presidency, you know, without even having gone to the schools, because she was living inside the White House. Similarly, if somebody's living in Krishna, living in the light of Krishna, Shastra Chakshusha, seeing everything through Krishna's eyes, he knows what's what. He knows reality from illusion, the true from the false, the eternal from the temporary. He is not omniscient. That's the Mayavad mistake. But he knows where everything's coming from. So Prabhupada said to this lady professor, better you ask, where does everything come from? He immediately just turned it right to the Vedanta Sutra. Janmad yasya yataha. The absolute truth is that from whom everything emanates. So anyway, sometimes Krishna gives you even, he ramps up the, you know, perceptions. And I'm torn between two stories now. I know there's not time for both. Anyway, I was in South India in the 1990s with my family, my wife and daughter, and we were staying, you probably have heard of this, it's the Bhaktivedanta Eco Village. You've heard of this place? It's halfway up a mountain, which is actually mentioned in the fifth canto. You just studied Rishabhdev not long ago. And there's a name of a mountain in the Bhagavad. It's called Kutakachala. So if you go to the mountain now, they call it Kutachadri, but it's the same place. And this is where Lord Rishabhdev chose to leave his body in a great forest fire that consumed this whole forest. So anyway, right now it's a national, what do they call it, forest. It's protected land. And because so many species are there, and the higher you go up in the mountain, the more rarefied and exotic the species get. So about halfway up the mountain, we have an ashram there. It's still there. So when, my wife and I had this dream of raising our daughter in South India. It was a nice dream. We learned a lot. Didn't ultimately work, but we experienced a lot of far-out things. I had an operation, too, in Udupi. Udupi is the nearest, you know, that's like the Vrindavan of South India, Udupi. So my wife has this condition where it's kind of nerves, you know, and she had a lot of injuries to her spine. And so anyway, but from the top of this mountain flows a holy river named Saupurnika. Saupurnika. And it flows down the mountain, then it flows into the village at the base of the mountain called Kollur. So about halfway between our ashram and the base of the mountain, there's this very amazing kund called Arasana Kund. And it says in the Puranic lore is that it was created by Agastya Muni, a very powerful Muni, who could, you know, these Munis can create universes if they want. So Agastya Muni created this nice kund for his meditation. So, from the top of this mountain, there is flowing this sacred river. And not only is it a sacred river, but this river is infused with herbs. And here's how that happened. During the Ramayana, okay, we don't have it here, but we just passed Ram Vijayotsava. So during the battle of Ram and Ravana, you may remember how Lakshman was knocked unconscious. Was it Lakshman and Ram, or just Lakshman? Just Lakshman, okay. So you remember how Hanuman, Vajrangaji, he flies to the Himalayas, and he's there to get herbs to bring back. But he doesn't have time to pick them, so he just takes the mountain peak. It's the Sanjeevani herb, you know. And he flies back, you know. And so this revives Lakshman in the Leela. And then he's flying, and like a good devotee, he wants to put the mountain peak back. So he flies back. He flies it back to the Himalayas. But while he's flying, he drops a couple of pieces of the mountain peak that's full of Sanjeevani herbs. And one of the pieces fell right on the top of this mountain. So you may or may not believe that lore. But if you take, this mountain, this river, the Soparnika, it flowed right through our ashram. And that's where you did everything, right? It was an attempt, it still is, it's Bhaktivedanta Eco Village. It's an attempt at really plain living and high thinking in a very paradisical, whatever the word is, place. So you bathe at the river because it's nice all year round, you know. And there's no mosquitoes, and there's no flies. And you wash your pots and pans and your dishes in the river because it's flowing. You know, remember the verse in the Gita? Who knows what verse? Yavanata udapane sarvataksam pluto daketa van sarveshu vedeshu brahmanasya vijanitaha. Krishna says, all purposes that are served by the small pond can at once be served by great reservoirs of water. Similarly, all the purposes of the Vedas can be served to one who knows the purpose behind them. And so in his commentary on this verse, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that it's very common that we keep different wells, he's talking about in Bharat Varsh in India. So we have a well for bathing, we have a well for drinking, we have a well for washing the clothes. You know, there's different wells are suitable for different purposes. But as Prabhupada would say, in the purport, and also you hear him say this on tapes, if you have a flowing river, you can do everything there because the river is flowing, it's fresh, it's always fresh. So my dear wife spent a lot of time at this river, and that's where you did all your, you know, socializing with the other ladies, you know, and she bathed there too, and she washed her dishes, and she did the mush and gush, you know, whap, whap, whap against the rocks, you know, the way they do the laundry. So she was there, you know, hours a day, and she loved it. And pretty soon, after like a month of this, everything in her nervous system that was bothering her just went away. And then I read in the third canto that it says that in the universal form of the Lord, the rivers are his veins. So there's some cosmic connection, some macro connection between, you know, this universal form and what's going on in our own micro bodies. And so she practically experienced it. All her pain and her stress, you know, she was like, wow. But our real treat was hiking down, trekking down to Arasana Kund once a week. Because in this kund, created by Agastya Muni, there is a 200-foot, well, maybe at least 100 feet. I think it is 200 feet. Falls is coming down. And it hits the ledge. Just before it hits the pool, there's a nice pool there. Agastya Muni created this pool, which the British tried to debunk it because the locals said it's bottomless. And the British went there with their instruments, you know, and they couldn't find the bottom. There's many places like this in India. It's some kind of portal to some other dimension, you know. So the falls hit the ledge, and then you can sit under the falls, or under the ledge, and get like, you know, I guess they call it hydrotherapy or something, and you have this, you know, herb-infused water, you know, just sort of pounding on your shoulders. Remember this, Madhu Gopal. Pounding on your shoulders, the way you were pounding on my shoulder. And then if you sit there under this ledge between 1 and 3 in the afternoon, every day without fail, as long as it's sunny, you get these circular rainbows. They circle you while you're sitting under the ledge. So you're feeling like real blessed and supercharged, you know. And then after you've had enough of the hydrotherapy, then you dive, you know, you do a surface dive from the ledge into the pool. And you just swim around, you know. And you come out feeling like superhuman. Take it from me. It's amazing. So there are places, and also in the 90s, yeah, right around the same time, maybe in the next year, our late great Sataputta Prabhu, our scientist, to write his book, what was it? I think it was Vedic Cosmography. It's either that or another one he wrote, Alien Identities. He wanted to report to the reader in his writing how there are still places on Earth where if you go, these places defy the known laws of physics. So what I just told you didn't necessarily defy the known laws of physics, but a godbrother of mine took, who was from South India, took Sataputta around to places that were like this, you know. So you can even go to these places. Even there's another place. There's so many places. So, okay. So, Jai, Sisi Radha Gopina. Ki Jai. What I want to do is share with you another purport, which is even more intense and challenging and emphatic and strong by His Divine Grace from the first canto, because if you notice, Srila Prabhupada took the opportunity of this fantastic description of trees and rivers and, you know, vyamas of honey and all this to sing the glories of plain living and high thinking. That's what Prabhupada took away from this, that these are gifts of nature, and we have the same opportunity if we're living in a culture of jugga instead of a culture of, you know, ugra karma and take, take, take. And here's, this is a famous purport, famous verse, you may recognize it. The verse is Shukadev. Kamang vavarsha parjanyak sarva kama dukhamahi shichituksma vrajan gavak payaso dhasvatir mudam. This is describing the reign of Maharaj Yudhisthira. During the reign of Maharaj Yudhisthira, the clouds showered all the water that people needed, and the earth produced all the necessities of man in profusion. Due to its fatty milk bag and cheerful attitude, the cow used to moisten the grazing ground with milk. Now, this purport is really strong. It starts very similar to this purport, but then Prabhupada, you can hear him roaring, you know, he just... Purport, the basic principle, don't forget, this is the first canto, and Prabhupada would sometimes say, I put everything in the first canto, I did not know how long I'd have to live, so I put everything in the first canto. The basic principle of economic development is centered on land and cows, and you have them here. The necessities of human society are food grains, fruits, milk, minerals, clothing, wood, and so forth. One requires all these items to fulfill the material needs of the body, not like the stores, which is full of stuff we don't need, trying to convince us that we do need. Certainly, one does not require, Prabhupada says, flesh, think prostitution. Certainly, one does not require flesh and fish or iron tools and machinery. During the regime of Maharaj Yudhisthira, all over the world, there were regulated rainfalls. Rainfalls are not in the control of the human being. The heavenly king Indradev is the controller of rains, and he is the servant of the Lord. When the Lord is obeyed by the king and the people, under the king's administration. There are regulated rains from the horizon, and these rains are the cause of all varieties of production on the land. What's rain in universal form? You remember what rain is? Called the semen of Krishna, fertilizing the land. So it's very natural, scientific. Not only do regulated rains help ample production of grains and fruits, but when they combine with astronomical influences, there is ample production of valuable stones and pearls. Grains and vegetables can sumptuously feed a man and animals, and a fatty cow delivers enough milk to supply a man sumptuously with vigor and vitality. If there is enough milk, this is where Prabhupada gets lyrical and really heavy now. If there is enough milk, enough grains, enough fruit, enough cotton, enough silk, and enough jewels, then why do the people need cinemas, houses of prostitution, slaughterhouses, and so forth? What is the need of an artificial, luxurious life? Artificial, luxurious. You notice the oxymoron there. Artificial, luxurious life of cinema, cars, radio, flesh again, and hotels. Has this civilization produced anything but quarreling individually and nationally? You see, Prabhupada, where is Prabhupada taking this? As soon as you're in this rabid mood where you're foaming at the mouth for sense gratification, you're just going to fight like anything, and that's what's going on all over the world. That's the beautiful thing about Prabhupada's vani. Every passing year it gets truer and truer and truer. Has this civilization enhanced the cause of equality and fraternity by sending thousands of men into a hellish factory and the war fields at the whims of a particular man? It is said here that the cows used to moisten the pasturing land with milk because their milk bags were fatty and the animals were joyful. Do they not require, therefore, proper protection for a joyful life by being fed with a sufficient quantity of grass in the field? Why should men kill cows for their selfish purposes? Why should man not be satisfied with grains, fruits, and milk, which combined together can produce hundreds and thousands of palatable dishes? Why are there slaughterhouses all over the world to kill innocent animals? Maharaj Parikshit, grandson of Maharaj Yudhisthira, while touring his vast kingdom, saw a man attempting to kill a cow. The king at once arrested the butcher and chastised him sufficiently. Should not a king or executive head protect the lives of the poor animals who are unable to defend themselves? Is this humanity? Whew! Are not the animals of a country citizens also? Then why are they allowed to be butchered in organized slaughterhouses? Are these the signs of equality, fraternity, and nonviolence? Therefore, now Prabhupada, he concludes, therefore, in contrast with the modern, advanced, civilized form of government, Prabhupada, you could be so sarcastic, an autocracy like Maharaj Yudhisthira's is by far superior to a so-called democracy in which animals are killed and a man less than an animal is allowed to cast votes for another less than animal man. And we have this going on right now in good old America, where it's 2 weeks away from the election. And once again, folks, it is Tweedledum versus Tweedledee. There's not a whole lot of difference when you get down to it. Okay. You know, when Obama came in 2008, he had remember what his slogan was? Did you hear that over here? Change you can believe in. Change you can believe in. So on the eve of his inauguration, the devotees had a big kirtan mela within eyesight of the Capitol at a big hall. And it was the event was called Chant for Change. And all of these ISKCON kirtaniyas were there. And also they invited these, you know, world famous now kirtaniyas, you know, Krishna Das and all these, I forget their name. But. And they had a big mela, you know, because they knew it was a hoax, you know, that change you can believe in. Okay. We are all, Prabhupada concludes, we are all creatures of material nature. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is said that the Lord himself is the seed-giving father and material nature is the mother of, in italics, all beings in all shapes. Thus, mother material nature has enough foodstuff both for animals and for men by the grace of the Father Almighty, Sri Krishna. The human being is the elder brother of all other living beings. He is endowed with intelligence, more powerful than animals, for realizing the course of nature and the indications of the Almighty Father. Human civilization should depend on the production of material nature without artificially attempting economic development to turn the world into a chaos of artificial greed and power only for the purpose of artificial luxuries and sense gratification. This is but the life of
dogs and hogs.
Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So it was very interesting to me how Prabhupada again took the description of this heavenly region on Kumbhuna Mountain as an opportunity to bring the point right back down to earth and teach us, you know, remind us that human life is really all about plain living and high thinking. Kamasyanen, we did this yesterday. Kamasyanendriya prithir. This is Sutta, first canto, second chapter. Labho jivete yavata jivasya tattva jigyasya narto yascheha karma bi. Life's desire should never be directed towards sense gratification. One should desire only a healthy life or self-preservation, because a human being is meant for inquiry into the absolute truth. Nothing else should be the goal of one's works. Okay. All right, it's 8:30. I think, yeah. So, if you have any questions or comments, I'd just like to say, please keep doing what you're doing here and just do more of it. You know? All glories to the cows. Bhagavati. All glories to the college. All glories to the Saivites of Sri Radhadesh, who are... Oh, and I loved it when all these kids came, these school kids. I guess you get a lot of these schools, huh? Oh, that's so great, as Karuna Mai was saying. And so then they'll remember this, that Hare Krishnas are good people. You know, they won't think we're weird or a cult. It's because we're, you know, we're living in a weird time where normal is weird, right? Yeah. So just do more of what you're doing and deepen your loving relationships. That's what it's all about. Because plain living is boring without high thinking. How can people live plainly unless they have a life inside? And that comes from steeping ourselves in Krishna's dramas, in Rama's dramas, and Chaitanya's dramas. And we get out of our petty, you know, he said, she said dramas. Okay, you have any questions or comments? We all have a part to play in Prabhupada's grand mission to re-spiritualize humanity, as he puts it. And what you're doing here is brilliant. I mean, people come here. That's just like in Mayapur. I'm going to go to Mayapur, you know, soon. And it's brilliant, you know. They're building a wonder of the world there. But as wonderful as that building is going to be, what the people are really going to want to see, okay, where is this culture? You know, that's the real challenge in Mayapur, is to build a culture that's commensurate with the wonder they're going to see inside the TOVP. So, yeah, Lord Chaitanya, the six Goswamis, our founder Acharya, they didn't give us a simple mandate. You know, we could all just go away and be Amish, right? As nice as the Amish people are, you know, it's even offensive in their tradition to reach out, to try to convert or to mix too closely with what they call, we have this phrase, you know, karmis, although that's a pretty elevated status. I mean, you're following Karmakanda. In America, they refer to the non-Amish as the English. Because they speak a Pennsylvania Dutch. You know. Anyway, yeah, so we have both mandates. It's a double mandate. Practice, you know, develop internally, plain living and high thinking. But at the same time, reach out. It's a Sankirtan outreach movement. It's for everybody. So it's like a super challenge, right? But we can only outreach as far as we've inreached. Otherwise, the outreach is hollow. You know, if I'm not really happy or coming closer to Krishna, then what am I going to tell people, right? So, therefore, health, sadhana, seva. That's the priority, right? We do it every morning. We get up, we take care of our bodies, and then we're fresh for sadhana to get inspiration for our mission. And that's part of the seminar I teach, finding our mission in the mission. So we owe it to ourselves, to our fellow Vaishnavas, to everybody, to our founder Acharya, to the whole world, to really find that service, you know, that we can really develop and make it our life's mission. And that changes over time too, depending on your ashram and your, you know, where you are, but we have to be fired up. So, Yukta Vairagya, yeah. Like at Kitanagari, Prabhupada was at Kitanagari for one afternoon in southeastern Pennsylvania, July 15th, 1976. I think I might have mentioned this in one class. And he gave a nice talk on, you can read the transcript, July 15th, 1976, Kitanagari, and he gave a nice talk encouraging the devotees to practice plain living and high thinking, you know, keep protecting the cows, working the bulls. But then he turned right in the middle of the talk. He said, but we don't hate the city. We don't hate machines. We only hate them when they make us unemployed. That's when we hate them. So then he started singing the Yukta Vairagya tune. It's true. But it's a great, you know, Yukta Vairagya is only the last line of that verse. You know the first line of that verse? Anasaktasya. When one is not attached to anything. Whoa! How do you become not attached to anything? By becoming attached to Krishna. Anasaktasya vishayan. Yutarham upayunjat. And at the same time is able to engage everything in Krishna's service. Then one is rightly situated above possessiveness. You know. So that requires deep internal work on falling in love with Krishna and knowing tattva and developing our relationship with Krishna. So, and then we can really, with a straight face, with an honest face, say Yukta Vairagya. It's so easy to say that. Yukta Vairagya Prabhu, you know, and we justify anything and everything. You know, sometimes when you hear somebody say, well, let's be practical, Prabhu, you know that person's going to do something cruel. Let's be practical. I'm taking that phrase in the wrong way. Sometimes it's an excuse to do something cruel. So we can't, in the name of doing, you know, in the name of engaging everything in Krishna's service, neglect to move toward how Krishna really wants the offering. How does Krishna really want the offering? Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives us a hint in the Patrang Pushpang verse. Patrang Pushpang Palong Toyang. If one offers me with love and devotion, because Krishna mentions bhakti twice in the verse, a leaf, a flower, fruit, or water, I will accept it. Vishwanath says, this means one has to plant the seed with devotion, cultivate the plant with devotion, harvest the plant with devotion, cook the plant with devotion, Offer it with devotion. Honor it with devotion. That's patram pushpam palam toyam. That's from seed to sustenance. How long am I going to lean on yukta vairagya and just eat anything and offer anything, just trusting the ingredients and some, you know, more and more. We're seeing. This is an example of how the vani gets truer and truer. We can't trust anything we buy anymore, practically. Anything you anything that's grown or milked, you know. So we have to more and more do this ourselves. Yeah. Should we give someone else a chance? Prabhuji. Carlo. Yeah, that's why sannyasis in ISKCON don't go to Hawaii. I mean, they do, but rarely. Yeah, Krishna says this in the Gita. He says it's yamimam pushpa. What is it? Bhogaishvarya prasaktana. Prabhupada quoted that verse in Miami in February 75. I was there. Prabhupada said, well, the verse is, in the minds of those who are too attached to sense enjoyment and material opulence and who are bewildered by such things, the resolute determination for devotional service to the Lord does not take place. And Prabhupada said, this is the demigods. And he said, you don't find devotees like the six Goswamis on the heavenly planets, reminding us of our great Gaudiya heritage. Don't fantasize about, you know, Svarga. It's the end game is a losing game. Kshine punye marchalo kang bishanti. You come down again. It's the Ferris wheel, you know. And you're not happy. You're intoxicated. But as soon as it wears off. Kshine punye marchalo kang bishanti. You come down in rain, it says in the Bhagavat, and then you go into the grain, and then somebody eats it, and you become in some samana storehouse, and then you're injected again. Ooh. Same old, same old. Yeah, it's tough. Yeah. Therefore, I think the only reason I lasted in Hawaii for 10 years, from 01 to 2011, I was in Hawaii. Wow. How? Well, because I was, well, it's a long story why I went there, but anyway, I was I was fixed on my sadhana and my seva. And as soon as you deviated from that, you went right out with the tide, with the surfers and the girls and the drugs and the... And many did, and not happy. So, beware of Prabhupada. Here's the funny thing about Hawaii. Prabhupada, he would joke about Hawaii. You know, you've heard of these, right? There's no happiness in the material world. But if there is, it's in Hawaii. But then in the very next breath, he would say, you say surfers, I say sufferers. And then there's this kind of unspoken, or not unspoken, it's spoken. There's this kind of weird, you know, twisted philosophy amongst people who aren't serious in Hawaii that, you know, Hawaii is different. You know, we know that you're supposed to be strict and all this, but Prabhupada understands. Hawaii is different. Prabhupada said you should go to the beach every day. You know, that's the kind of director they remember. But the funny thing is, when you hear all the recordings from Hawaii, Prabhupada is super heavy because he knows who he's talking to. Super heavy on intoxication and illicit sex. It's really heavy. How they come out with that philosophy is because they don't hear. You know, we hear through the desire filter. But we hear what we want to hear if we're not attentive. So you have a good thing going here, Carlo. You don't have Hawaiian weather. You have Belgian weather. And therefore, there's no question of being an illusion because I think I said, as I walked out of the laundry and then I saw Anasuya sitting there in the sun, I said, why don't we have clotheslines here? She said, Prabhu, in an hour this will be a storm. Don't get comfortable. So please pray to Sri Sri Radha Gopinath. I can come back next year with new slides. They're in the works for the seminar. This professional web designer, he's got so inspired. He didn't even see the seminar. He just heard about it. And he's making these super art, you know, artsy Art Nouveau slides. And then I'm going to embed Prabhupada's voice, you know, in the slides. So you won't have to hear me doing my impressions. Any more questions? Let's see. Ooh, time's up. Okay. Yes, please pray to the deities I can come back next year. This is their rainbow darshan. I like this. It's kind of like Hawaii. Only better.
It's Vaikuntha, Goloka.
Srila Prabhupada ki jai.